Hello and welcome to Game of Thrones Weekly. Tonight we're discussing the best lines of Game of Thrones. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello and welcome back to another great show of Game of Thrones Weekly. I love this music. When I don't hear it and I'm not the one here weekly, I miss it. It's just so invigorating.
Gets the blood going. On a cold day like this, when it's only like 64, 65, you need to get the blood going.
You guys know me. I'm Kristen Elizabeth Snyder. You can follow me at Cinematic Escape on all the social mediums. And I have the pleasure of hosting tonight with the Jeremy Dan, the professor of innovation and entrepreneurship at USC Marshall Business School. Thanks so much for being here, Jeremy.
Awesome to be back.
I missed you. I was sick, and Ryan had to fill in for me. I know that show wasn't near as exciting, right?
I didn't get my daily dose of...
Kristen.
Or weekly dose. Oh, I need it. It's like vitamin E. Or
yay!
Vitamin D. Which do you get from the sun?
You get both of them from me.
Okay.
All right, so tonight we're going to be discussing the best lines of Game of Thrones. And Jeremy is a writer, and I moved out here to be a writer. I'm still working on that. But we just love the best lines of Game of Thrones because that is what gets you really in the show. It helps you see the character development, really makes you fall in love with those characters. But what you're really falling in love with are the writers of the show.
Well, yeah, I mean, they make the show very quotable things. I mean, it's not just the events, which are big enough on their own, but people are quoting the lines at the water cooler the next day. And they're a part of our cultural parlance and our common language now.
We got them on t-shirts now. We got them on bumper stickers. Jeremy has socks with his favorite Game of Thrones lines on.
Not just socks.
Oh, my. Well, I'd say you could follow Jeremy and see what all kind of clothing he has, but he has yet to start up his social media. And if you guys want him to, you should tweet at me so I can show him. You can yell at him and we'll get him as a group.
Follow me on LinkedIn.
Oh, on LinkedIn. Great. Or you can go to USC Davis and...
USC Davis?
USC, what is it? USC Marshall. That's a school, too. Marshall.
Marshall is the school I teach.
The business school, yeah.
Yes, yes.
And they can take a class from you.
Maybe.
Maybe. It's tough to get in.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. You could dream about it. Lots of money, too. Anyway, let's go ahead and break into our lines. Jeremy, throw a line at me. One of the lines you think are the best from Game of Thrones.
Let me give you some advice, bastard. Never forget what you are. The rest of the world will not wear it like armor, and it could never be used to hurt you. That is early on setting the tone between Tyrion. Two characters, Tyrion and Jon Snow, who wouldn't see each other for... years, but they obviously developed a little chemistry, but that was him giving a lesson as he had been belittled a bit by the brother, Jaime. He was unsure of himself even within the Stark hierarchy and had been for years, and getting ready to go to an uncertain situation where he didn't know what his new status in the hierarchy would be. So that line, Tyrion kind of still wore that better, his dwarf or little man or half man comments. John, it took him longer to embrace it. Now I think he's a little more comfortable in his own skin.
I agree. That was, for you guys at home wondering, season 1, episode 1, Winter is Coming. Very early. In fact, the earliest episode we could go. And, you know, at that point when we meet Tyrion, he's like introduced to us as this brothel loving Dorth, like he's drinking. But then he gives this line to Jon, which sort of makes you and the viewers see him as more than just this drinking, fun-loving little Dorth.
Yeah, and you could also tell there was going to be a little animosity between the Starks and the Lannisters, but it looked like this might be an entry point where they could connect a little bit between these two guys. Of course, again, it still took like another 6 seasons for us to see it
again. Well, I'm going to throw one at you. I'm going to say, the man who passes the sentence should swing the sword.
And also that was, very early.
Yeah. Of course, Ned Stark. Same episode, actually. Season 1, episode 1, Winter is Coming. And this quote is everything a stranger needs to know about Ned Stark in this world. I mean, he's basically one of the greatest characters of the series, especially morals-wise. I mean, he had, like, such a hard righteousness and duty and... sense of honor about him. And in this pilot episode, like, you immediately get that, you know, he's a leader and it connects the person to their choices. And he's saying, you know, if you're going to say you need to kill this guy, you have to be the one to do it. You can't just say, like, Joffrey and have, you know, the Mountain or someone like that actually kill the person for you. If you're going to make the sentence, you need to be the one to kill them. And I completely agree with that.
Yeah, well, of course, Robb Stark followed that same mentality, and he paid a little bit of a price. And one thing that's interesting with that line is it's a line of the Starks. You mentioned other houses, other leaders don't really follow that. But we saw a trial recently where Sansa, essentially, in, you know, ruling in Jon's absence, didn't quite follow through on that. I mean, she has a different philosophy than her dad when it came to the Littlefinger sentence that came down so quickly.
I mean, she had a badass sister, though, to bring in that death sentence. I mean, seeing Arya there, I mean, she's the perfect person, though. And she's the one who originally wanted him dead.
With his own dagger.
Yeah. Amazing. That went down pretty much exactly the way I wanted it to. But it just shows respect to the individual that you're punishing if you're the one to kill the man. So I love that line. Go ahead at me, Jeremy.
Well, also, again, pretty early in the show, and this is a line that I just thought was so full of badassery, even though it was right in the middle of a beautiful garden and the person that delivered it was wearing a stunning dress. And that is Cersei. When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. And that just was the kind of line that, you know, stops you in your tracks. What's amazing about that whole exchange between her and Ned, he had so many cards. He had so many of the cards. He had the drop on her and she was still confident. She still revealed so much stuff about the sex life and the fact she had had kids with her, brother. She gave him even more material and then had the confidence to finish up this whole exchange, or not finish it, but later said, "What of my wrath, Lord Stark?" when he said to beware of Robert's wrath. I mean, she was badass in this.
She was. And again, this was season one, episode seven. They actually just titled the whole episode, "You Win or You Die," because that line obviously held strong to a lot of people. And I mean, I feel bad. I kind of feel like Ned shouldn't have threatened Cersei about telling everyone that, you know, her children weren't legitimately Robert's, because that's pretty much began his death sentence. And that's, you know, kind of where this line came about. He was about to tell everyone that her children were not her own. And he was like, "I'm going to give you some time to leave."
The Machiavellian, if you're analyzing strategies, you know, he probably should have, if he wanted to make a major move, probably should have held that way more close to the chest.
I think this was a grave mistake for Ned. I'm not very punny.
Thank you, Mike Myers.
But yeah, I feel like, oh, you know, two episodes later, he was done, dead zone. So maybe should have not gotten involved there. But we miss you, Ned. We really do. I'm going to pull one from Cyril Farrell, the water dancer. He says, "There is only one God, and his name is Death. And there is only one thing we say to Death, not today."
I mean, that's been Arya and all of the people that have had so many near misses. I mean, that they could all live by that, but she certainly has since then.
Now, do you think that Cyril Farrell is actually, people have said since we never saw him again, that perhaps he was one of the many face gods and that was just one of his faces and he was Jock and Hagar?
I've certainly heard that conjecture. Yeah. Also, you know, he could have just escaped. I mean, anytime on Game of Thrones when you don't see, there's a side of me that thinks that, you know, Stannis might still be out there because we didn't see. But, you know, the fact that the Hound didn't perish, you know, someone like Cyril Farrell, where you just hear a little noise in the background, I hope so.
I love him. He was the first Sword of Braavos, making him a badass swordsman and the first guy that basically teaches Arya how to use her sword.
He's the first Sword of Braavos, but yet he has to earn extra money by essentially tutoring the SATs. I mean, that was a little lame.
She was high. He wasn't teaching just a street rat you know, how to water dance, but I love seeing her
fight.
Well,
she became that in like two episodes.
Good point. She lost her parents, became an orphan on the street. Good thing she got those lessons in beforehand, or she wouldn't have had money to pay for them. But, you know, this kind of began her descent into the underbelly of Westeros and reinforces the lessons as she goes on murdering multiple men. So we get to see this throughout the series. You know, those lessons continue today when we get to see her water dance. And I'm glad that we started from the beginning and got to see her train. So that makes her quite fierce, in my opinion, and one of the best character arcs of Game of Thrones for me, because we saw her literally start from being this like girly girl to now being this like faceless god.
Well, she always had a little more of an edge, but it was the playful edge, and that became edge.
Yeah, it's just edge now. It's just a different face.
She's all edge.
Yeah,
literally. Yeah.
What do you got?
Speaking of edge, someone threatening someone else with a little nice thin dagger that he likes using for carving up body parts. But if you think this has a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention. And that's Ramsay Bolton just after being kind of hidden, you know, as like a stable boy or something. You're not quite sure who he is. I mean, just reveals himself as just the sadistic guy, and he's also kind of stepping in for George R. R. Martin a little bit, because this is a way, a parallel of kind of the way the books go,
right.
You know, the Red Wedding and other things where you think you're gonna have a nice, happy, comfortable scene. Not as many happy endings as you think. Maybe a little happier right now with some of the ways the families have gotten together, but it's been a while for that payoff.
I'm pretty sure that Ramsay's is at least the second hated the character that second hated the most.
Joffrey.
After Joffrey is what I was thinking. Yeah. So this was actually season 3, episode 6, The Climb, when he teaches Theon this lesson, which I have some other Theon lines, and Theon was not exactly like a good Catholic boy. So maybe this is a lesson he needed to learn. Eventually I started to feel bad for him, but you know, he kind of was a bad guy also in the beginning, so to see like one bad guy give it to another is kind of feeling justified. But I didn't really like Ramsay. I mean, especially in this moment. I mean, including those of the happy ending of the vicious good guys. I mean, just
that's very strong of you. Anti-torture, anti-flaying. You are such a humanitarian.
Listen, I mean, it's in this world that doesn't really exist. So on. I want to bring up everyone's favorite character, Hodor. And this is actually Bran Stark that says this line. He says, "Hush, Hodor. No more Hodoring." And he says this in season 3, episode 9 for the Reigns of Castamere. And Bran obviously is like Hodor's biggest companion and best for, you know, Hodor only says Hodor. And in this episode, he was panicking during a thunderstorm and yelling Hodor, Hodor. And Bran is like asking him to stop Hodoring before finally he works into his body. This is right before Bran actually works into his body. And this is the first time that we as an audience like saw that Bran could warg into a human, which was huge. So it's not only just like the line that's maybe best, but really what was happening in that moment. And I mean, it was known for its like depression, this depressing moment of the show.
Well, it's presaging what eventually happens. He didn't know how much he'd miss it when the Hodoring is gone.
I know. Anytime you think about Hodor now, it's sad. I don't think people like it anymore. I don't know. It's kind of sad. I feel like they stopped saying Hodor as far as hold the door, because now they just think of how it's sad. It was a sad ending.
Indeed.
All right, what do you got?
One of my favorite minor characters, and someone with an awesome accent, Lyanna Mormont, and just in the hall of Westeros with her and her line. Yeah. I just like the way she said this. "You refused the call. You refused the call," talking down like these 60-year-old men and Lord Kerwin, who I think is probably in his 20s. But the smallest, youngest person just talking down to these dudes and basically starting the guilt trip that then gains John credibility mm-hmm. that leads to the pledges of, you know, them believing he can be the king of the North.
I love
King in the North.
Yeah, I love that. I love that little girl with a big voice, and they give her the best lines. So I just, of this past few seasons, I mean, when she spoke, it was like you really listened because you don't expect those type of lines to come from a girl that looks like her and is so small and looks like she should be playing with her stuffed animals, basically.
And, so. And she was also very good in that. She is the king of the kind of short lines. I mean, I love it mm-hmm. when they were in that hall at Bear Island when she would just say, you know, and why are you here? And then there's this like awkward silence. She's the queen of the awkward silence when she delivered yeah. those lines.
I'm going to throw it at Lord Varys. And this line comes from season 2, episode 3, What is Dead May Never Die. And the line is, power resides where men believe it resides. It's a trick, a shadow on the wall. A very small man can cast a very large shadow, not unlike Lyanna Mormont. But in this scene, Tyrion's making his moves in the capital, and Lord Varys becomes his confidant. And Varys sees the power that Tyrion possesses. Even though he's like a smaller guy, he sees all, you know, that he could really help out.
But you wonder how many of those other, he had similar lines to other people because, you know, he and Littlefinger are master manipulators and playing different sides. Yeah. So maybe he had a similar speech about shadows and things to other characters. You never
right.
know.
But we know Tyrion's strength is not obviously physical, but rather in his wit and his manipulation. So, yeah, I really like that line. And of the people who truly control the events unfolding in Westeros, at that time it was like Joffrey, Stannis, Renly, Robb, and Baelin. And so it was nice to see Tyrion kind of coming in and giving his say and starting to change the way the course of things were going. Especially now, where he is standing behind Daenerys. Who would have ever thought that? I really wouldn't have put him there.
But it appears making a lot of the wrong calls lately. We don't
know.
No, maybe
what happened to all his good lines? He used them in the first 6 seasons, apparently.
He's not as snarky, not as good maybe with the one-liners, but also his strategies. A lot of them, like the taking of Casterly Rock, have gone wrong. So he was casting maybe a bigger shadow a little bit before.
That's a good point.
Where's he going to play in that last season?
Gosh, I don't know.
I
just hope he makes it.
He'll make it.
Oh, okay. What do you got?
An early line that seems so out of place, but again, it set the tone for this sweetly delivered line. That let you know this character has this charm, and at the time we thought he was unredeemable. But Jaime Lannister, delivering a line that could have been out of some 80s pop song. The things I do for love.
Oh.
As he pushes Bran out the window after, you know, post-coital, after he's with his sister. And essentially that sweet line puts in motion a war that kills tens of thousands of people and puts us the whole kingdom in doubt.
And he said it, just like you said, like a line from an 80s song, like so nonchalantly, like this wasn't going to change the whole future of the show. I mean, I remember that episode and just knowing after that this is not your average show. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just going to do whatever they want. And it doesn't matter if they're killing off your favorite character or they're pushing them out the window.
Well, you had so many moments, literally this line of, this ain't your average show. This ain't your average show. Because we got it pummeled with that like 6 or 7 times. That was one. The beheading of Ned Stark was one. The Red Wedding was one.
Yeah, like earlier, though. Yeah. Why aren't they still doing that?
Because now we know what show it is.
Now we expect it.
Maybe they'll still amp up the game. We'll see.
Oh, I hope so. Honestly, a lot of people thought the last season was the best. And, I mean, none of these lines that we're saying are from the last season. So, to me, that means, maybe you have a few from the last season, but I don't have any. And to me, that means that, you know, we're looking at the past, at the amping up of a great show.
We've talked about the fact the last couple seasons there's been a rushing.
Yes.
So maybe the rushing of the storyline has come a little bit at the expense of that extra couple of lines the characters can say to each other. That's that killer, awesome line.
I mean, when I feel those, when I hear those lines, I also feel those lines. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm not getting that, it's literally just plot point, plot point, plot point. If actually, not character development.
I do have one right now that is from, is it last season? Leave one wolf alive and the sheep are never safe. So that was an part of an awesome intro of Arya Stark.
I remember it well.
I mean, I think it might have been...
It was the first episode.
But is that the one time they've had action before the sweeping credits at the beginning of the show? It was a pre-intro scene of her in the Frey's Hall at the Twins. And obviously... taken out about, 40, 50 family members. She went from about 4 or 5 kills up to 45 or 44. And she avenged the Red Wedding, essentially.
She sure did.
I mean, they gave credit to Jon Snow for avenging the Red Wedding, but she was the one that did it on that side of the house in a big way.
Well, no one knows that, though. I mean, she doesn't go around killing people and then sending it to the newspaper and, like, putting claims on it like a lot of serial killers do nowadays and, like, having a certain way.
She let them know in her own way. She tells the wench, who was it, the wife? Frey's wife standing next to him, his young wife. When they ask you what happened here, tell them, you know.
But she never revealed her identity.
That winter has come for House Frey.
Okay, so she let them know the Starks were behind it.
It's like the Z for Zorro. She kind of left that,
right.
The verbal
but she doesn't
Z
normally
for Zorro.
Do that. I think that was more of like getting vengeance for her family. So at that point, she wanted to know who delivered that vengeance.
I mean, that's definitely not the Faceless Men way. So she
she's rogue.
The Faceless Men get their orders of who gets killed, and she has gone rogue, and she has also been unmasked. You know, she unmasked herself.
Yeah. I love that she's gone rogue. Rogue is my favorite Arya. And speaking of Arya, this wasn't like a great line, but it stood out to me when it was season 2, episode 5, The Ghost of Harrenhal. Arya is captured and brought to Harrenhal, and where she's basically served to Tywin. She's like the cup bearer, but she's basically like, you know, servant to him.
Cup boy, they thought.
Yeah, exactly. They thought she was the boy. And during their conversation, he asked her about Robb Stark, not knowing that obviously she was his sister, because like you said, they thought she was a boy. And Arya tells Tywin that people say that Robb can't be killed. And Tywin asked her if she believed that. And she said, no, anyone can be killed. And so, to me, she delivered this line, like, stone cold, and she stares into Tywin's eyes, and it was so chilling, it was almost like a threat. No, anyone can be killed. Just the way she said it, and looking so, like, dead on at him.
Well, think about her experiences today at that point. Daddy. and along the road, I mean, she was playing at being a swashbuckler with Ciro Forel and all that, and all of a sudden she's more than living out that life. And who had she just been put in the mix with? Jaqen H'ghar, who she's in
the
conversation
misfits, the merry with men.
With him at that point. Speaking of which, can I jump in,
please,
with what? Now right on the heels of that, I thought Jaqen H'ghar, he has like one note every line, whether he should be angry. This guy has the best like narrator voice for a kid's show, you know, but he delivers a line like, the red god takes what is his, lovely girl, and only death may pay for life. And then talks about her taking the 3 deaths, and he owes it back so she can name the 3 names. And I just love the way that actor delivers every line he does in that tone. And then that balance that he talks about. And Arya has taken it out of balance with all those Freys and everyone else. I wonder if there's going to be repercussions for her. But that kind of laid down a law that we thought was kind of, you know, the law of the Faceless Men. She's definitely violating it later.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I want to take a time out to mention a special guest that we have in studio. And also, do we have a Thanksgiving little special? We know that Amber talked about it last week, but Jeremy has something special for you guys who are celebrating Thanksgiving this week. And I want to present to you, Jeremy, and everyone at home, half the reason that I'm here today. And his name is Charles Leroy Snyder, also known as Kristen's dad. Hi, Daddy. He came all the way from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Actually, the farmlands of Pennsylvania. He actually had to drive like 2 hours to get to the airport, then 5 hours on the plane.
He didn't fly to a plane, to a plane, to a plane.
No, then 2 hours in a car. So it was basically like going kingdom to kingdom in Game of Thrones to get here. But he's also Sir Davos's brother.
I mean, he's got that look.
He's got the pirate like jewels, obviously. He's got an earring, which you can't see right now, but in the beard.
Oh, I mean,
he's a swashbuckler.
He's a swashbuckler. He could also be kind of like a retired member of the King's Guard, I think. Has
definitely
a little bit of that look. Mm-hmm. Very, I mean, there's Davos up there.
There's your brother up on screen.
Kristen has all the connections. You could definitely get him to be an extra in the next season, right?
I think we can make that happen for sure. The Onion Knight number two. So what do you have? Speaking of Onion Knight, what do you have for us on this? Thanks for being here, Dad, by the way.
Yes.
Thank you.
Leroy.
Well, I know you guys are, I mean, we have the family time of Thanksgiving, and Amber did an awesome job in the last episode laying out, like, the perfect Thanksgiving with these delicious sounding Game of Thrones dishes. I mean, honey chicken. I mean, she listed like 180 ingredients in
Holy
these things.
Cow.
I mean, these things were, I mean, I was salivating listening to her, and you'd have an amazing Thanksgiving if you just listened to some of the recipes she gave out. But, you know, Thanksgiving, sometimes it's not always as smooth, and the food can be kind of disruptive. You know, I the other side of this Thanksgiving thing is, imagine, you know, you're having the Friendsgiving or
potluck,
a little potluck Thanksgiving action, and Walder Frey comes in and he has the bread and salt to welcome the guests. Well, it's all he brought, and you know Walder Frey's bread and salt, which means that you're supposed to welcome guests.
You're supposed to be safe.
Guarantee safety. It doesn't mean anything to him. Yeah. It's not even delicious. You're eating it and you don't like it, but you're still supposed to be safe. This is not a good appetizer from Walder Frey.
Walter Frey, you're not invited next year. Oh, wait, you're dead. Who else do we have coming to this Thanksgiving?
Well,
potluck?
I mean, another one from that, you know, that same, you know, Arya, one of her specialties that she learned when she was in Braavos was oysters, clams, and cockles. when she was the harbor merchant, taking her cart around with, I mean, probably, you know, bacteria infested. There she is, bacteria infested.
I thought she was going to bring, like, the cookies from her friend.
Cookies from her friend?
Hot pie?
Oh, well, that's coming up. We got a little more action from that, but, you know, she's another one. She has, it might sound delicious, even though I think they're out of season. But she had that, instead of Tabasco sauce or whatever, she had a little droplet of poison she was supposed to put in those.
Sure,
so that
did.
Would also not be a great addition.
Arya, you are not coming to Thanksgiving.
but speaking of what you're talking about, Arya brings along her friend Hot Pie, who is
a baker.
I mean, he has some talent. We hear about his great pie crusts. He bakes the wolf bread, which we saw it early on. It didn't look very good. Then he baked another one that looked really good. But, you know, this is one of those things that you bring it to someone's house and no one wants to eat it, like, because it looks pretty good. And
look how good that looks.
Have you ever seen, what's that?
He made those cookies. You know what? I think he has his own shop. Like, now I don't think he's, like, acting. I think he really, in real life, has a bakery.
Yeah, that's not from the show, is it?
These cookies. I remember those.
So the bread.
Oh, that's him, like, outside of the show for sure.
Yeah, there's no t-shirts on Game of Thrones. So you have the wolf bread. And have you ever seen it when someone gets, like, the bread and they, like, lacquer bread to preserve it as like a centerpiece?
Oh, my
Are you
dad,
into that?
Yeah.
You're a bread lacquerer?
Yes. My dad's bringing the bread that you can't eat. You can just stare at it. In the pinacopia? What is that thing?
Cornucopia?
Cornucopia. Pina coladas, cornucopias.
Was that your hobby? Are you a ship in a bottle guy too, and a bread lacquerer?
I just wanted to try it once.
Do you still have it? Is it hanging on the wall in the kitchen?
No, I think it's
It was probably sold to another swashbuckler.
I mean, I remember from my childhood, I think bread lacquering is out of fashion now, but yeah. Maybe this mention will bring it back.
We gotta bring that back.
People had bread hanging on walls in kitchens that you could, knock on it. Did you have that?
My dad had an Italian restaurant when I was younger, and so we had all the breads hanging down, lacquered up.
Okay. Yeah. So it would probably be lacquered, and someone would try to eat it and just get a mouthful of... They're not so much bringing food because they're kind of selfish, kind of controlling. They wouldn't contribute. But, Tywin Lannister is really good at carving stags. I mean, that's a famous scene. He was great carving that stag, rolling up the sleeves. And he's the kind of guy that shows up at Thanksgiving at someone's house and, takes the knives from them. And he's saying he really knows how to carve this turkey. So he's stealing the manhood from someone at their own
There are guys who do that. They like to do the grill, and it's mainly...
And the carving.
Mainly thing to do. Grilling, carving.
You can't hijack a grill at someone's house, and you cannot hijack the carving.
You gotta ask, but Tywin didn't show up. I feel like he's definitely doing the hijacking. I mean, he literally looks like he was killing someone in that photo.
That was one of my favorite scenes from all of Game of Thrones. The symbolism.
Yeah.
But another guy, he's actually bringing a good contribution, but he's kind of complaining about it. Robert Baratheon is bringing some wild boar to this, and I'm sure it's delicious, but he's the guy complaining, I was slaving in the kitchen. Literally, this killed me. making this dish killed me. And we know it actually did. The wild boar killed him.
Yeah.
And he wanted that as a final feast. So we could serve it at Thanksgiving and
Tywin
departed.
Can carve it up?
He would carve it. He would gladly carve it.
Aw, there's Robert. Poisoned Robert.
That was not a good hunting trip for him.
That wasn't. No.
That was not fun.
Mm-mm.
But another one, you know how someone has the dish they just keep bringing and you're kind of, you always predict
Fruit
it?
Fruitcake.
Fruitcake. Like Sir Davos. The Onion Knight.
He
has a shipload of onions, and he might have had some turnips on it too, but every year you're getting the onion, whatever, onion casserole, onion. Maybe he can make those crispy onion strings.
I don't know. He should do Outback Steakhouse where they have the blooming onions.
Blooming onion.
Come on, Davos. Dad, you got to tell Davos to let you bloom those onions. Brother Davos.
I didn't know we had a chef. His mouth is watering. He could probably make a lot of these dishes.
I'm sure he could.
Now another one that, again, we don't know what it is. It's a little bit of a mystery meat situation.
Oh, boy.
And that's Ramsay.
What is Ramsay bringing? It's dog meat.
He's bringing pork sausage.
Ugh.
Remember the scene with the fork?
Yeah.
Pork sausage. We don't know quite what he's eating because he's just kind of tortured and flayed our friend Theon a little bit. We kind of don't know what Ramsay's sausage is when
it could be partly Theon, unfortunately, or it could have been one of his dogs because he loves his dogs so much. And if one passed away, I could totally see him honoring them by eating one. But then that happened the other way around.
Big time. Big time. Another dish that...
Doggy, would you like some Ramsay? Doggy, would you like some Ramsay meat? Doggy, would you like some Ramsay?
You're scaring me.
Listen, this just kind of came to my mind. It reminded me of that Freddy got fingered with the sausages because we were talking about sausages and he's like, Daddy, would you like some sausages? Daddy, would you like some sausage?
You have a little too much fun with this.
Please don't rewind that. Anybody? Okay, good. Sorry.
Well, no problem.
That
no
just
problem.
Came over me.
But a dish that might even be more delicious, at least to her. She's bringing a dish that she likes that maybe no one else is going to like, and that's Dany with a little horse heart,
which
she seemed to take a real liking to.
She's the only one eating that, for sure. Dany, you're not invited either. Sorry. I love you, but horse heart, I don't think we need that at the table. I don't think anyone wants that. Dad, do you want that? Dad's not eating
Look at
horse
that.
Heart.
You see that?
Yeah. We're not eating that.
That is
Sorry,
delish.
Dany.
There it is.
Not doing it. Who else is coming?
Well, the final one, unless we want to count some beverages. I mean, a great dish that we saw being made, Samwell Tarly.
Aww.
Was on Kitchen Duty. He was on kind of every duty when he was in Old Town. And he was a part of making a stew that kind of looked the same way going in as it did going out.
I remember that scene so well.
And the problem is we kind of can't tell which state it's in. So if he brings that, like, it's the kind of thing that goes untouched in the corner.
It's like, and you don't know what it is. You lift the lid, and then you put the lid right back down.
He might be guilting. He's asking everyone throughout the party, have you tried my stew? And maybe people are taking a bowl and putting it under the table, dumping
it. To the dog.
To the dog.
Yeah, I remember that scene really well, and it haunts me. Because it was like a montage of the stew being poured in a bowl, and then someone on a toilet just having a really bad evening. It was like splash, 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 splash. Is that a good imitation?
That's pretty much it. Are you a Foley actor here?
I am not. This is not my casting couch or tape. So, yeah, I'm not going to get casted from this. I'm definitely not going to be in the last splashing season of Game of Thrones, but maybe my dad will. Foley? No, probably not. Okay, I got a line for you, but those were amazing.
We're back to the lines. Love it.
We're back to the lines. I loved all the food. None of them are invited to my Thanksgiving.
Well, the thing is, Amber gave us the awesome Thanksgiving, the delicious Thanksgiving. We had to show you the darker side.
Yeah, this is the potluck you never wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Unless you're just a huge Game of Thrones fan, which we all are, but like, this is not the edible potluck that we would want to attend. So, this is from Daenerys Targaryen, this line. Season 3, Episode 3, The Walk of Punishment. And she says, all men must die, but we are not men. And
girl power.
Girl power, female power. When you heard these lines that Dany said, I mean, you just... These lines that, like, were known to everyone as truth, she broke those lines. So many of them, not just this one, but all men must die, but we are not men. I mean, when you heard all men must die, you just automatically assumed in your brain that was men, that was women, that was everyone. But not Dany. Not Dany. She reads that line differently.
She can be reborn in fire like the phoenix.
She really can. And I really felt empowered when she was saying all of these sort of feminist lines, and it comes at a time in the series when she's building strong momentum and power, and when she has these great lines, you really feel like she's building this army that is needed.
And that would be a good t-shirt line, like, with recent current events. You could wear that t-shirt proudly around the world.
Definitely.
Right now.
Lots of women's marches, we can wear that too. Do you have some more lines for
me,
Jeremy?
I do, and another woman that I just thought was dropping bombs left and right. It was hard to pick. I knew I wanted to take one from her, and that's Olenna Tyrell, the Queen of Thorns, when she was talking with Cersei, who said to her, hey, the famously tart-tongued Queen of Thorns, and she replies, and the famous tart Queen Cersei, and really put Cersei backpedaling. Cersei had been a sparring partner for a lot of people and hadn't been intimidated, but that one kind of was a splash of cold water in her face. And she went on even in that conversation. Cersei said, as for your veiled threats, and Olenna goes, what veil? I mean, she was... All over it in that conversation, and about a dozen more, even toward her death, where she's still whipping them out to Jaime when her whole army's been defeated, her whole family and her whole line is gone, and she still has the last word in everything.
Definitely. I have a line when Varys is talking to Olenna about Littlefinger and just, how he is trying to influence and the concern of his growing power and how he's manipulating people. And Lord Varys says he would see this country burn if he could be the king of ashes. I mean, Littlefinger just wants to be the king of anything. And I'm glad that we eventually saw his rise and fall. But I mean, he is just literally was grabbing at anything. And I have another awesome line from him that I want to say. This one actually from Littlefinger. Littlefinger in season 3, episode 6, The Climb, says, chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder. Many who try to climb it fail, never get to try again. The fall breaks them, and some are given a chance to climb, but they refuse. They cling to the realm, or the gods, or love, illusions. Only the ladder is real. The climb is all there is. Peter Baelish. It's a great line.
That, well, he's more than a line guy. He is a soliloquy, a sermon guy. He's literally the, you know, the cartoon villain twirling his mustache,
exactly.
Although he does it much more poetically, but he is revealing so many of his approaches.
Yeah, I mean, he's just like, his ambitions are very kept secret and how manipulative he is, and his speech basically reveals in chaos and violence and destruction of the realm, that's when, you know, he can come up on top. When everything else is in chaos, that's when he can rise. So he uses chaos, he creates chaos in order to help himself rise to the top.
But that same that same speech and that same approach was used against him when Bran was able to quote it back. And in the last few episodes, he realized, you know, Bran can't read minds. He can only read scenes, so to speak, and by him having his soliloquies, he was definitely burnt when that could be quoted right back to him. So I got another little finger one from another one of his fun soliloquies, and this is one when he was in his establishment, so to speak, and there were some interesting background activities going on, shall we say, but he was talking to Roz, his at that time protege. And recounting his duel with Brandon Stark, the older brother of Ned Stark. And he lost that duel and was given a cut, I believe, across the face, but humiliated in the duel. But he said, you know what I learned losing that duel? I learned that I'll never win. Not that way. That's their game, their rules. I'm not going to fight them. I'm going to F them. And meanwhile, you have little bit of a faux sexual encounter going on behind him. And that just symbolized he was going to take joy in what he did, his manipulation. He was not going to take anyone head on. He's like the always in the shadows and never played the Game of Thrones the way a Ned Stark would play it, a Robert Baratheon would play it, and so many other characters. He played it his way and maybe overplayed his hand, but was very successful for a while.
Yeah. You know what? I miss Littlefinger. I do. You know, I was glad at the ending he got, because in the end, you are obviously rooting for the children of the show more so than the manipulative adult who not only wanted to sleep with their mother, but also wanted to sleep with the mother's daughter. So at that point, he made himself easily, you know, the bad guy and the person you wanted to see going down. But he wasn't always the bad guy. I think at some different points of the story, we sort of liked him.
Well, a couple times you thought he might have Jaime-fied. Maybe he's gained respect for Sansa because she sort of saved his life in the Vale. Then three episodes later, he's essentially selling her off to the Boltons. And he was someone, he had no moral grounding. No way.
I have some really bad news, Jeremy. They are telling us that it's time to wrap. And I have like 15 more quotes here.
I'm done. I'm spent.
Okay, well, I just want to say one more. When Dany is in front of that man she's been dealing with who didn't know that she spoke Valyrian, and he was calling her the B word and a whore. And she just says, she has her Drogon there, and she just says, Dracarys. And Drogon lets him have it. And he's just burned up. Ashes away. Female power. I just love Dany. She just gets me all excited. I feel strong.
You like the death.
I like the death, too. That's not too bad.
Well, so right there, that was a moment of empowerment where she got to use that line. What did you think of when she used it?
Sam Tarly. The Tarly family.
I did not feel good then.
No. Mm-hmm. I felt very bad in that moment, and that was a time when I was very upset that she did not listen to Tyrion, but she kind of had to do that, because we always saw her do that in her own world, but now, you know, the worlds were interfering, and we saw her do that in a world where we knew all the characters, so it came at larger stake and really actually hurt us. But those guys were not good guys, by the way.
They had a different kind of honor. Certainly the son did.
Yeah, I liked Dickon Tarly. He was cool, but they were never nice to Sam. Never.
He was the younger one. And that shows you that there's kind of the unintended casualties that someone I think we were meant to like over those episodes was, you know, in the way that slave trader, we were meant to totally not like him. The same line, the same approach led to someone I think we were starting to feel a little sympathetic toward.
Yep. Well, they're saying we must wrap now, but I just want to say that the cast got all their scripts for news portion of this. They got all their scripts, and Kit Harington said that basically they all read their final scenes of how their characters come to an end, and they all were pretty much in tears, not because necessarily what happened, just because it's going to be so hard to say goodbye to the character who basically put them on the map.
And the paychecks.
As actors. Exactly.
Well, let's hope that in that reading they got some lines that were as memorable and move the story along and develop characters as much as these lives we talked about tonight.
Yes, and Dad, thank you so much for coming all the way from Braavos to be here. And Jeremy, Dan, always a pleasure having you in studio.
All the way from Hollywood.
All the
to
way
the Valley.
From USC Marshall School of Business. And you guys can follow me and Chris and Elizabeth Snyder at Cinematic Escape. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to have another great show next Sunday, so tune in, same place, same time. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Dracarys!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only. They do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.